Blog Talk Radio.
Ken English, welcome to another edition of Eco Lounge. I'm coming to you from Miami, Florida, and we're going to talk about the Dima Show coming up in Orlando in November 4th through the 7th, 2009. I'll touch on some of the activities that are taking place. I launched a new program today called Dima Show Radio, and the Dima Show Radio program is going to be on, when it is on Blog Talk Radio, it's 11:30 a.m. Wednesday morning, Eastern Standard Time. We'll be talking with a number of people today. I had an opportunity to chat with Peter Symes, the publisher of X-Ray Magazine, x-ray-mag.com. And he talked about his role and what he's going to be doing at the Dima Convention. You can find that archive online at blogtalkradio.com/DEMASHOW, Dima Show. It's the radio program on the internet that's going to focus on the convention. It's the Dive Equipment Marketing Association convention coming to Orlando, Florida, November 4th through the 7th. And we'll be talking more about that next week's edition, 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time on Wednesday. We'll feature Jason Heller. Jason Heller is the founder of DivePhotoGuide.com. He's also an executive in a digital online marketing company, and he's doing a couple presentations at the Dima Convention on the importance of using the internet. So we'll be focusing attention next week on the internet with Jason Heller on the Dima Show that is on blogtalkradio.com, 11:30 a.m. on Eastern Time on blogtalkradio.com. It's on every Wednesday now, leading up to the convention. We'll be talking about a couple other things that are taking place here in the Miami area, some things on the water side, and also down in the Keys. I'm going to be joined by Gary Levine in just a minute. We're going to talk about Live Rock USA and some of the interesting things that that Gary has gotten involved in since he completed a project, the world's only underwater mixed-use facility, I like to call it. It's an artistic rendering, recreation of Atlantis, a mythological destination in an area called the Key Biscayne Special Management Zone. It is now called Neptune Reef, but when Gary put it together, it was not only was there barren, sandy bottom there, but there was a lack of tourism activity from the water side, and it stimulated both. So we'll talk with Gary Levine in just a minute. I'll be right back. You're listening to Ken English and Eco Lounge.
Are you looking for a new direction? Are you tired of working for someone else? Would you like a career that has meaning? Consider becoming a hypnosis professional. Let Lawrence Miller, a hypnosis instructor certified by the National Guild of Hypnotists, teach you the basics. 100 hours of training, and you can begin a new career. Continuing education prepares you for clients with a wide range of emotional issues. Most decisions people make as adults are influenced by perceptions established as a child. If you are unhappy with where you are today, emotionally and financially, you need to open the door to your subconscious mind and reframe past experiences. As a trained hypnosis professional, you can help yourself and your clients achieve more by reprogramming your mind. It's never too late to change unwanted behavior. Control over smoking, weight, poor performance, fear, and anxiety resides in your subconscious mind. If you'd like to know more, call Lawrence Miller at 951-970-7868. He can help you reach your potential by helping you reach inside and talk to your subconscious mind. For a new outlook on life, consider becoming a hypnosis professional. The School for Hypnosis, Temecula, California. Lawrence Miller, founder. 951-970-7868.
Joey's Cafe at 2506 Northwest 2nd Avenue in the Wynwood Arts District of Miami. Eclectic menu, 80-bottle wine cellar, outdoor patio. 305-438-0488, 305-438-0488. Joey'sWynwood.com, JoeysWynwood.com.
It's the 16th of September, 2009. You're listening to Eco Lounge, Miami, Florida. I'm Ken English, producer and host. I'm the Blog Talk Radio Guy. You can check out my website, blogtalkradioguy.com. I'm joined now by Gary Levine. Gary Levine is down in the Florida Keys in the Isla Mirada area. Welcome to Eco Lounge. Gary, how you doing?
I'm doing good, Ken. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine. Absolutely. Coming across loud and clear. What's happening down in the Keys?
Moving a lot of rock. We have been increasing our sales every month in our aquaculture facility and perfecting that which we do, increasing the quality of rock and the sizes and the consistency of delivery. And we've been now going ahead and fortunately have been able to develop a lot of commercial accounts. And so we're finding a lot of opportunity here.
Why don't you take a minute to backtrack and just to tell people who are listening now and in the future who you are and what you are doing.
Okay. Well, you know, I've started out in marine construction back in 1986. '84, and had always done water projects, built marinas, docks, seawalls, dredging, and things like that, while operating three barges and cranes up and down the intercoastal. And as you know, in about 2002 or so, I got involved with the concept of building the underwater reef of the Atlantis Reef Project offshore of Key Biscayne. And working with Kim Brandel, who is a very talented sculptor, designer, we co-created that reef. And contrary to what you may hear, I've found on the Neptune website that they like to take credit for creating it. They've never had anything to do with creating it. It was strictly by Kim and I. So we put the first phase down there after our merger with the Neptune Society, and terminated our relationship back, going back about a year and a half or so. So that reef, I doubt that it's going to ever be anything more than it is. So we were kind of disillusioned after that failed relationship between the parties of the corporate money-making as opposed to the project creation. And Kim and I have gone back to what we did before. Kim's down here in Isla Mirada building. As a matter of fact, he's getting ready to do the new tower top for the Freedom Tower down there on Biscayne Boulevard. And he did the globe at the entrance to the Port of Miami, the big globe of the earth. Plus, he's just always been a great guy and a great artist. And while he was transitioning back to that after terminating his services to Neptune, I went then and made an offer to him to go get involved in live rock aquaculture with me. And he was just the mind that he was going to get back to doing sculpturing. So I went this alone and bought some aquaculture leases offshore of Isla Mirada that had about 600,000 pounds of live rock. So I brought my boats down. We leased a building on US 1 just next door to Theater of the Sea and built a facility for doing aquaculture of live rock. Now, let me just clarify for the record, and I don't know if you're familiar with this, Ken, but there's two terms. One is mariculture, M-A-R-I-C-U-L-T-U-R-E, and the other is aquaculture, which is exactly how it sounds. Aquaculture is a project that is done on land. It's a land-based project where you develop marine organisms. And aquaculture is done as an open ocean environment. Sorry, I had that entirely backwards. Aquaculture would be on land. Mariculture would be in the ocean. So we developed that site and started bringing rock in and marketing that rock. And we're now doing right around 7,000 pounds of rock per month going to marine aquarium owners primarily. And our reason for doing that was because the reefs in the ocean are a worldwide phenomenon. And there's X quantity of reef. Let's just call it a factor of 100. And it doesn't matter if they tear up reefs in Fiji or in Tonga or in Haiti, which they're doing now to supply the U.S. aquarium market, because there were no active aquaculture initiatives working in the United States, pretty much except for one in Tampa owned by a pretty good guy named Richard at Tampa Bay Saltwater, and us on the east coast of Florida at Live Rock USA operating out of Isla Mirada. And we decided that for every pound of live rock, quality live rock, that we can create and sell, it is one less pound of live rock that will be taken from the natural reefs, primarily in Fiji and Tonga, because there is no live rock allowed to be taken from the natural reefs or out of the oceans of the United States at any location. And then being in Florida, and especially down in the Florida Keys, there is no better environment in the United States of America where you can grow and culture live rock. And so we got down here back in February of this year and have been going at it ever since, bringing rock in every week and shipping rock out every week.
Now, the aquarium industry, is it very large?
Oh, it's huge, Ken. 90% of the aquarium trade in fish and corals and live rock comes into the United States of America. This is the number one location for saltwater aquariums in the world. Over.
Now, there's freshwater and saltwater. Primarily, you're talking about saltwater aquariums, right?
Right, I'm talking about entirely saltwater aquariums. Freshwater aquariums, you can pick up any kind of rock. You could put granite or a glass rock, or even they make a lot of plastic-looking rock. But in the freshwater aquariums, they're a lot less complex. You don't have to be testing on a regular basis your water for your salinities, ammonia contents, nitrates, and things like that. And in the freshwater, you just add water. So it's a lot more complex ecosystem than what they call a reef tank.
And what role are you playing now? I mean, what difference does it make if the rock comes from Fiji or Tonga?
Okay, well, a few things. One is the phrase live rock means live rock. That means that it comes out of the water and gets in your fish tank, and it has live organisms on it. And you can pull up a piece of live rock out of our site, and it's got crabs, worms, you can grab an octopus here and there, all types of plants, corals, and sponges already growing on that rock. Now, our rock's been down there for over 10 years, and I bought my leases from a couple great guys out of Tampa area that had leases in Tampa and here, and they logistically just couldn't service this area, so that was why we were able to make a deal. So, and each area has different growth on the rocks, from a bay area to an ocean area to a Tampa area, will all have different characteristics. So that those live organisms, that's what creates your biological filter in your aquarium. And your aquarium, saltwater, must have live sand and live rock in order for your aquarium to cycle and become a true ocean environment inside of a controlled area that is got filtration, circulation, lighting, feeding, and all the things that would take place in the ocean.
Now, it would seem to me that what you're doing is creating a renewable source of live rock. Again, I'm obviously never having been to the Fiji and Tonga. Those are very pristine and in idyllic settings in the Pacific. I can't imagine that there is just rock lying around that people are picking up off the bottom of the ocean. They got to be in there breaking it off of coral reefs and things. Is that how that happens?
Yes, they use crowbars. And in reading, I have a little article. I'm at my desk, so I'll see if I can get that and a pair of glasses to read it. I'm going to read you, I've just found it, a statement here that says, in 2001, the International Coral Reef Action Network estimated that Fiji-based aquarium suppliers air freighted 1.9 million kilograms of live rock, enough to fill the equivalent of 48 Boeing 747-400 jumbo jets. At the same time, the Fijian government warned that 3% of the reefs around the country's largest island had already been damaged or removed as a result of the explosive growth in the country's coral and live rock trade. So the islanders, they make pennies an hour for tearing up the reefs. Well, the entrepreneur that was smart enough to go over there a long time ago, an American fella, he's making the bulk of the money and living a great life. But that little bit that supports the tribes is important to the Fijian government, who is now trying to find new ways to support their local tribespeople.
Now, hasn't there been some movement recently to ban the importation of that rock?
Yes, there has, Ken. There's a couple things that are happening. One, there's a House resolution in our House of Representatives to ban the importation of live corals, fish, and live rock. This is wrong. Okay, fish swim. It's not like deteriorate, and there's not that many being taken. Certainly several, but that's something that's a continuously renewable resource. Your coral reefs grow very slowly. Fish breed every year. So if they would take that bill in Congress and eliminate fish and invertebrates and leave it as rocks and coral, that resolution would pass. And so we're working actively to get the people to see the difference in the two objectives. You can grow coral. People are doing it now. It's called fragging, where they take a piece of coral that's already in the United States, cut it up into smaller pieces, and it just grows, and everybody's growing it. So, and the samples, it's just like the, what do you call it, stem cells. The group that's available is enough to make more. So they don't need to tear apart any more corals from the natural reefs to bring them in the United States. We've got Australian corals, Fiji corals, Tonga corals, all corals from all over Indonesia and everywhere else already existing that through fragging, they would never run out. The supply would be a never-ending supply. The supply of fish, if they keep tearing up the reefs, that will be a diminishing supply. Tearing up the reefs is certainly a finite number, and the world needs to get a grip on that, because without the oceans, you are going to find a lot of our ways of life are very different. And one example is now that 50% of all of the primary fish that you find in the supermarket, tilapia, pompano, catfish, are all grown in aquaculture facilities, including clams and oysters and mussels and things like that that we could do right here in the United States, building our economy. And it is also, as you're doing this, as you put in live rock aquaculture sites in the oceans, it's a tremendous fish attractant, feeding ground, and protective area. And there's just no reason why we can't supply the U.S. initiatives.
Now, your website is liverockusa.com. And on the site, you show images and pictures of the material, basically. Isn't all rock the same?
No, it's not. We bring in rock from several different places in the United States because it does have different characteristics. In live rock for an aquarium, you're looking for porosity and holes that fish can go into or organisms can go into because it makes it lightweight. It's interesting. My poor buddy Bobby, who's a great guy, has been down there lobster fishing in Big Pine Key for probably the last 25 years. Lobster now in being sold from the boats to the trucks that pick the lobster up is selling now for only $3 a pound. Live rock in a pet shop sells for typically $7 to $8 a pound. So if you think about it, going out and catching a lot of lobster is a lot harder than going out and catching a lot of rock. And every aquarium requires between 1.5 and 2 pounds of live rock to build your reef system. So when you have a 55-gallon aquarium and you need 75 pounds of live rock, and you go to the pet store and you buy your 75 pounds of live rock for $7 a pound that's coming in from Fiji at a price of about $1.20 a pound, the profits are excessive, and the quality of the U.S.-grown aquacultured live rock that doesn't sit in a freighter coming across the ocean is superior to the Fiji live rock and even the Tonga live rock and certainly the Haitian live rock. Reason being is that if you start out with a quality rock, you will get a quality rock product. If you start out with an inferior rock, somebody just goes to the quarry and says, let me have 20 tons of rock that don't hand select it, you will not have the quality that you can get from overseas.
I was up in Tamarack a couple months ago at Big Al's Aquarium. And in talking with one of the guys there, they were talking about the way the rock is displayed in aquariums and that there's methods of actually shaping, well, either taking rock as you're doing it that has interesting shapes and placing it in the ocean, or in this guy's situation, he said, I'm creating in a very small scale a shaped rock by pouring concrete in the sand, you know, and letting it harden, and then he's got arches and all sorts of little miniature structures, much like you did with Atlantis, where, you know, with Kim doing the columns and the lintels and all of that. This is on a much smaller scale, but he said he's been working on this idea of, you know, a child's sand, a swimming pool filled with sand. He carves out, you know, little patterns in the sand, pours in concrete, and when it's hardened, he's got these neat little structures. So you can be creative with this, can't you?
Oh, absolutely. And that's a good example that you gave, because Kim built Atlantis with his heart. Everything that he did with that, he loves the ocean. So he built that with his heart. And everything that he made to create extra habitat instead of just thinking about dollars. In the rock business, and I'm glad you mentioned Big Al's. I'd like to tell everybody, great store. I think it's Tuesday. They have shark feedings in the store, which are probably pretty interesting. And I stopped in the other day and dropped off a box of my rock to Doug, who runs the saltwater department, and Devin. And I called Al to see what he thought of the rock. He says, as soon as he opened the box, he sold the whole box. So they ordered again that day, and if you go in there, you'll find some of our product.
Well, so certainly, if you go to Google and you Google in Live Rock USA, one of the returns about number six position now is the video from Big Al's. And, you know, I found it really quite fascinating when I was there. Not only is it an extensive network of aquarium tanks and exotic fish and the like, and it really is another world going into it. But in the back, when I asked them about the live rock, you know, sure enough, just like going to a grocery store of sorts, here this is Fiji, this is Tonga, here's live rock from Isla Mirada, and each one has its own little section in there. And not being an aquarium person myself, I never really gave much thought to that. But everything that you're saying about the environmental impact to these exotic destinations, people really need to be more informed, but better educated about this, don't they?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Now, Fiji did impose their own ban last year, and they'll do it again this year, and hopefully they'll get to the point where it's all the time. And Haiti, Haiti's corrupt. They shouldn't be bringing anything in from Haiti, but, with Haiti, with $50, you can probably tour the presidential palace. And I hate to say that, but that is a corrupt nation, and they have so much potential because of their oceans and mountains that they have there to make it into something. But, it's just like so many of our Banana Republic-type places where you get a strong man in there and it's just hell to pay for it. So these imported rocks, I can't say that there aren't some very attractive rocks out there because, they have different characteristics. But I don't care about characteristics. I care about that we don't tear up the natural reefs of our ocean, and there's no stopping it. World Wildlife Fund is on it. CITES is on it. But there's just happens to be too much corruption in the shipments. They name the shipments something different. They can't check all of the shipments. And there are shipments that do get returned because they shouldn't have come in here. So there's so much more to it that I'm not interested in that part because I'm not, I'm not that involved. I haven't been in the live rock business but for 7 months. So what I've learned is simple. Number one, I don't do fish, I don't do corals, I don't do invertebrates. They have too many scientific names, they're too fragile, and I'm not smart enough to do it. But I certainly understand a rock. And so that made it easy for me. So our concentration has been on quality live rock. And anybody listening can go to eBay, because we sell on eBay also, and our name on eBay is Keys Live Rock. And we have probably 150 comments where people can leave their feedback on eBay that say that this is just absolutely the greatest live rock that they've ever purchased. Now, if it is that, and if we can keep doing that, and if we can stay with a competitive price and a consistent product, we can stop the importation of live rock into the United States to a degree. That requires reaching the marketplace and being able to get out and get the message out that we do have quality rock for sale right here in the United States.
Well, how do you communicate with the marketplace? I mean, how do you get that message out?
Well, interesting question. Today I spent my day with a search engine optimization group that we're going to be tweaking our pages that will reach more people because I just put up a web page and went right to work harvesting rock and packaging and selling. So we've made that step. Second, on my desk is a business plan that was completed the day before yesterday that will be getting passed out this weekend for a group of very environmentally conscious and well-to-do investors that we're asking them to take a good look at this very progressive green initiative that has long-term great rewards. And thirdly, in that same business plan is the development of a national sales market because we sent our a guy that came down here visiting and just wanted to buy one rock for a friend of his. And he called me up. He says, you know, I think I could sell this rock. And he went up and opened up store after store after store up in the Northeast and also in certain parts of the Carolinas where he travels in his normal course of business. And they're large orders, and the response is repetitive orders. So if you can do it in New York, you can do it in Chicago. If you can do it in Chicago, you can do it in Denver. If you do it in Denver, you can do it in Phoenix. So it's getting the staff out in the street, or the only alternative you have is the Internet.
Well, certainly a program like this has a potential to be part of that communication channel. The video online ranks really well. So if all of that is tied into the website, that'll be some help, I would imagine, as well.
Oh, I'd love to put it on, especially when I have a calm interview. Like, you know, so many times we talk, Ken, and I'm in a hurry doing this or I'm in a hurry doing that, and it kind of like speed through the conversation. It's not all well thought out. I like it when I can just sit back and talk, you know, and get this message out.
Well, isn't that the lifestyle of the down in the Keys? Everything's laid back?
It's a little too laid back for me. You know, I like it to go.
It's got to be an interesting transition, though. I mean, you in Miami, you're running around like crazy with the Atlantis Project. Now to go down to the Keys, I mean, you're still running around, but it is a different mindset, isn't it?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you think back, you know, I spent 5 years on the development of Atlantis, and to see it go from what it could have been to what it is very disheartening. And so getting down in the Keys makes me feel a whole lot better. I think Kim feels a lot better because, I'll tell you, he worked 10 times as hard as I did. I got to do paperwork. He was out there welding steel and slinging concrete. And so, like, you know, coming down here, it's good. You know, I feel good about it. Isla Mirada is probably the most beautiful island in the Florida Keys. Great food, you know, we get out and, boy, when you want a fish sandwich down here, it's just one restaurant away. And so, yeah, I'm enjoying it. I'd like to get a little more settled, but right now all my focus is on building the company.
Well, the way that that's evolving, I mean, a while back, the last time we talked, you were talking about a network of partners or business associates, or is that alliance still on being part of what you're developing?
Oh, yeah, very exciting. There's an alliance in the development with a company called Coastal Wetlands out of Virginia who grows on land what's called eelgrasses, and eelgrasses are to Virginia and the Northeast, like shoal grasses, turtle grasses are to us down here in the Florida Keys. And they do restoration and mitigation. And coming onto this property in a project that they're going to be doing, that we'll be working with them, will be headed by another new alliance, Jason Myers and James Stovall, to build tanks to create these shoal grasses and turtle grasses to repair gouges from propellers and groundings and do mitigation where needed, because nobody's growing these grasses hydroponically. Now, in our facility, they love this facility because of our saltwater supply, and they just like the way the whole thing works and our dedication. So we're preparing press releases this week to announce this alliance.
Well, perhaps in the future, some of those people could be guests as well.
Oh, absolutely. And you'll be hearing from all of them very shortly, I assure you. Then one other aspect of it is that in a saltwater tank, you need a very special kind of sand called live sand or aragonite sand. And they've reached an alliance with the people in Ocean Cay in the Bahamas to be supplying that to the aquarium industry and for their mitigation projects. And that's exciting because there's only but a few sources for aragonite sand in the world.
Well, the environment is such a complex issue and becoming more so every day. Coming up, I think it's October 24th, an organization called 350.org, 350.org, is organizing an awareness day of climate change, coinciding with the UN Day. And apparently in Copenhagen, all the world's leaders are getting together to talk about some kind of environmental agreement. But all of this, it moves so slow. You know, it is government and it's a lot of bureaucracy. And in the meantime, the reefs of Tonga and Fiji and other exotic places are being ripped apart. Sharks are being finned. We're really creating havoc in the ocean, aren't we?
Oh, it's a nightmare. And I think that these people talk too much and do too little. I think they should all get on net meeting and stop spending money in the United States and going on exotic vacations in Copenhagen. I don't even know if they have any water in Copenhagen. I'm sure they do. But, I mean, most of the initiatives, you think about the United States of America that everybody likes to bash. There is no country on the planet that puts out the amount of foreign aid that we do and the amount of good that we do in rebuilding and the amount of human rights positive energy actions that we do. And, I'm a very pro-American guy. Copenhagen trips and meeting in Paris and all that, you're talking to the wrong guy for that. I mean, we do the work here. We do the science here. Yes, other people do certain things, but nobody does it on a scale of the United States. And we should start positioning ourselves for such. You know, it's this country that built the internet structure of the world. You know, and brought a lot of countries right out of the Stone Age, some of them. And our resources, one of the greatest resources the United States has is knowledge and science. And it should be appreciated more by this world that we live in. I get my political views in on your show, too.
Well, it's an open mic program, but it's also one of those things that you, as you start looking closer at a lot of this, many people don't know. If you don't have an aquarium, you certainly don't know what damage is being done. Those that would have an aquarium should become more aware of it. Many of them just go to a retail store, you know, like Big Al's, and say, "Oh, well, Fiji, that sounds exotic. I'd like something from there." And they buy it because of the name. They really don't understand the channel. And so, consequently, there is a need for a broader educational program and something that's done on a regular basis. A press release here or there, that's not enough. There just needs to be a consistent awareness type of thing that's out there, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And for us, I worked with NOAA and Department of Environmental Protection and EPA and Department of Environmental Resources Management, and good God, everybody else when I built the Atlantis Reef. And the too much regulation, too much. I was talking to my girlfriend the other night, and I told her, I says, take a look at this. And I printed her out the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. That took 7 pages of paper. The health care bill is 1,100 pages of paper. It's like I said, too much interagency stuff, which was supposed to be prohibited under the Magnuson-Stevens Act, the duplication of efforts. Reef building, if they made it simpler, and it is very simple to understand, the more concrete and the more steel and the more structures that you put in the ocean, the more fish are going to be created and the more life is going to be created. Now, that's a half-page document. Okay, but when they get all the agencies together to figure these things out, all the money goes into the toilet. The $870 million that the Recovery and Reinvestment Act allocated for coastal development projects, NOAA lopped off the top of the $870 million $700 million of that to build a new facility and get a new boat. Now, the money was supposed to go into the ocean. So out of the $870 million, there was only $170 million left, and they only did 50 out of some, I think it was either 300 or 800 submitted projects. That's our government at work.
Yeah, well, certainly there's chaos in the government. The overall expenditure, so many changes, it's hard to believe how much change is going on now. It's only going to be a matter of time before we see it, whether it's any good. It looks bad in many, many situations. But why don't you just read a little bit more, if somebody's listening, how they would get in touch with you. And then I've got a couple things I want to close out the program with.
Sure thing. We've got our website, www.liverockusa.com. We're down here in Isla Mirada with a real simple phone number, which is 305-664-3131. We allow people to come in and pick their live rock from what I believe is the largest supply of live rock in the United States to be chosen from. We keep about 5,000 pounds in stock for delivery at all times, and or for picking your own at all times. And you know, we're here primarily. We're here Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. We bring the rock in Saturday and Sunday, and we ship on Monday and Tuesday. And on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, we do internal work. So we welcome anybody to come down, because when people come, they come on the weekend. And our doors are always open. We also tour the facility. Any universities or schools that would like to tour the facility are also welcome. And anybody with a progressive mind that wants to get involved in this green initiative, we would always welcome their contribution. And I thank you again for the time on your show, and I'd like to do it more often.
Well, very fine. I mean, I guess as things settle down and you get a fine direction, we can set up an independent show, you know, and really just do it as a weekly program live from Isla Mirada, you know, and talk about the progress and the things that are taking place. So
You've known me for a while now. How long has it taken you to get me to sit still for 1 week? Or for a day?
Oh, it takes a long time, but I think that, you know, cell phone from out on the ocean, you know, guests that call in, but with the undercurrent of aquarium rock, you know, and things like that. But we'll talk about that. Gary, thank you very much for your time.
All right, Ken. Take care.
All right. Talk to you again later. That's Gary Levine, LiveRockUSA.com down in Isla Mirada. This is Ken English. This is Eco Lounge, and I'll be right back. This is Ken English. You're listening to Eco Lounge. Coming to you from Miami, Florida, we're going to stay in the Keys for the remainder of the program. Richard Stewart is joining me now. Richard, how are you doing today?
Hey, Ken. I'm doing great. I'm down in Key West at the moment. I've been down here for about 2 weeks working on the Key West section of the Eco Guide Florida Keys.
How's that coming along?
Fantastic. We, you know, we started this project about 4 months ago, and we're hoping that we would be able to get support for at least a 24-page eco guide. And we are now in our final run here in September to wrap it up, and we are at 52 pages.
Wow, that's great. Why don't you highlight a little bit of, even step back, introduce yourself for people who listen in the future and are not aware of who you are and what you're doing. You know, give a little bit of a background.
Well, I am publisher, editor-in-chief of several publications through our company, Ocean Realm Media. And Ocean Realm Journal is one of them, which is our 172-page annual Eco Destinations publication. And then we have our Eco Guide series, of which we have one published up in Volusia, one that we're doing down here in Monroe. We're planning to expand that idea in the Dade County area as well as Broward. And we also have one in production, in process to be launched in Catalina, California. So we're getting a little bit out of our South Florida area, looking for great destinations that have environments that offer a lot of nature tours and aquatic adventures and things like that. So, and in addition to that, we now recently have signed on a deal to publish snorkeler destinations with National Geographic Snorkeler People.
Well, that sounds interesting. Tell me a little bit about that one.
Well, National Geographic Snorkeler is a branding division outside organization of National Geographic. It's a licensing deal. Just like the National Geographic Diver kind of situation is a licensing deal with PADI, between National Geographic and PADI. This is also a licensing agreement that gives Nestor Palmero, the vice president of the organization, the right to produce snorkeling equipment and accessories and logo wear and things like that using the name National Geographic Snorkeler. So with that in effect and growing with his distribution across the country, we thought it would be a great idea to put something together for the people who are looking at his gear and give them something that would sort of point them in a way of some of the more pristine regions around the world for snorkeling. Of course, you know, yes, you can snorkel anywhere, but you're not always going to see anything. So what we thought we would do is put together a guide that would simply direct people to some of these areas. And so we are working on that now for spring 2010 release.
Well, that sounds really neat. I mean, as you know, the pet project that I've had, you know, nothing's been done with it for 10 years, but I'm coming up on the 10th anniversary of the world's only underwater margarita bar off of South Beach. And the intention for that back in May of 2000 was to use it as the starting point or centerpiece or whatever of a snorkeling trail, because I felt and still do that destinations that are coastal destinations like Miami Beach really need to have something in shallow water. There's artificial reefs, and I've talked a lot about that over the years, but there's nothing in the Miami Beach area that people can see in shallow water. And that's a shame. I mean, the guide that you're putting together, if there was a trail in Miami Beach, it probably could get in there because of the nature of the destination itself. But I know that in the Virgin Islands there's some designated trails. Jason Taylor, who's an underwater diver and a sculptor, is working down in the in Cancun, one of the national parks, underwater parks in Mexico, and putting in his sculpture garden that he did in a similar one in Grenada. And those are in 25 feet of water or less, so those will all qualify and should be really neat. I think that's a great idea. I'm looking forward to hearing more about it.
Yeah, it is a fact that Miami could be doing a lot with a little bit of effort to create that snorkel trail that you've been looking at and envisioning for so many years. I would hope that maybe we can get a little bit of information about the Miami area, some, you know, at least to feature the margarita bar and as a place that you can go snorkel on from the beach. And then hopefully that might encourage the city to take a more, aggressive look at putting out some materials out there, maybe getting Gary to help put that together. So not that he doesn't have enough going on. As a matter of fact, I have not been able to catch up with Gary in weeks and months because every time I drive by his office, he's out and about.
Kim Brandel's involved with that, but when this guy Jason Taylor was in town, I took him to show and showed him the location of where it was, and he just looked around on Miami Beach outside of Nikki Beach there, and he said, wow, this would be a really awesome place to have some statues. So, I mean, he would create – it isn't so much finding the talented artists or the creators of the statues. It's the bureaucracy. You know, and so you get caught up in these coastal environmental issues, and you really need a champion that's in the government of Miami Beach or Miami-Dade County. You know, and many of those people involved in it are just busy with other tasks. So creating something new isn't on their at the top of their list. They're trying to just maintain what they got. So it's difficult. But May 5th, 2010 is the 10th anniversary, and I really, even if it's a one-day conference, I think I want to get back on that mindset of let's do something down there.
Yeah, I'm amazed. I mean, for such a simple process, a small cost and unabrasive activities, so creating some artificial reefs and some trails there in Miami, that it would be so hard to pull off because of the government process. So yeah, I think that's just amazing. I think some kind of a reef conference would be a great idea to put together next May. If we don't look into it for May, maybe we should invite the idea to come down to Florida Keys in November, because we are producing Eco Week in November 2010, and one of the events that we will have here is the State of the Oceans that we had formerly done in Orlando, but we're now looking at having it produced in Key Largo. And State of the Oceans would be a great place to have a coral conference at the same time.
I think you're right. What is the Eco Week? Why don't you? We got about 7 minutes left. Why don't you just highlight some of the activities you're involved with down in the Keys?
Well, my regional partner on the Eco Guide, Christy Allen, and her good friend Michelle Beach thought about, since we were doing all this eco-related activities with the publication and through Glee and all the green certified process that we're trying to get businesses to go through, came up with the idea of organizing an event that would be a week-long celebration of the sea, a celebration of the environment. And originally it was going to be something that would be a Chamber of Commerce, Key Largo Chamber of Commerce event, and it was just going to be in Key Largo. And then the Chamber of Commerce in Isla Mirada heard about it, and they said, well, we want to be a part of something like that as well. So the idea started to expand. Then, of course, it got to the point where it was going to be too big and too cumbersome for either of the Chamber of Commerce to manage the whole idea. So we formed the Eco Week events as a nonprofit corporation to manage the production and development of multiple events. So we are not producing the events ourselves. Like, we are not producing the poker, the kayak poker run, or the the alternative energy races, or the sailing regattas, or the windsurfing regattas, and all the different activities that are being planned. We are the marketing umbrella, and we are working with GLEE, that's a green living energy education, organization, and so as the umbrella organization, our role is to coordinate all these events into a schedule that people can keep up with, and to do the marketing. So we will actually be doing the advertising and marketing of the events throughout 2010 up until November. So, but what happened was one of the county commissioners had a chance to meet with Christy on other related projects, and when she heard about the EcoWeek idea, she said, this really needs to be keys-wide. And so before we knew it, we had worked about 2 months and starting to organize activity and stuff in the upper keys. Before we knew it, now we're doing it also in the lower keys. So it's grown in a major way very fast. And we recently went through the process of applying for advertising funding through TDC, Tourism Development Council, and were granted some very, very nice amount of funds to use for national and state advertising, which these funds, 90% of the funds have to be used outside of the Monroe County. So anyway, it like I said, it's a celebration of the environment. It's a lot of educational things going on. There'll be fairs, there'll be concerts, there'll be fashion, eco-fashion shows, bicycle races, kayak races, dive reef cleanups. We're even having a lionfish safari, so where people will go out and literally we're searching for the lionfish that are spreading pretty fast throughout the Keys. So it's going to be a very fun and exciting event, and probably one of the biggest eco events in the country.
Well, it sounds really great. If somebody's interested in talking to you about the Eco Guide series, basically you're building this out with regional publishers. So wherever somebody's listening now, if they're in a destination that has some ecotourism activities, they might be in a position to joint venture with you. Isn't that the way it works out?
Yes, that's the way it works. Each region has its own regional publisher who's in charge of basically developing the sponsorship opportunities so that we can produce them. And anybody who might be interested can email, can go to our website, ecoguides.info, or email Richard at ecoguides.info, or call me at 352-817-5893. If anybody has an interest in the Eco Week activities, then they can go to the website, ecoweekfloridakeys.com, and that site is being updated on a weekly basis with what activities have been put together and when they are, and who's going to manage them and so on. So if there's anybody that wants to get involved, they can just contact us through the website.
It's Eco Keys Florida, Eco Week Florida Keys.com.
Correct.
I just put it in the chat window so I could click through and it opens up. Great. Okay. Well,
and I would have Christy get on here and chat with you about it because she's got everything that's going on in her head is all in her head. And yesterday she and I were in Marathon at a Chamber of Commerce luncheon and did a presentation on Eco Week. And she's, Christy, she is fabulous when she stands up to talk. People listen. And today she's at a Rotary luncheon doing another presentation in Isla Mirada. So she's a busy person.
Well, as you know, we could actually set up the Eco Week radio program as well.
Yeah, we absolutely are planning to do that, Ken. And we're looking at how to maybe underwrite some of the Eco Lounge time with a little bit of the budget that we have so that we can make sure that we can stay on top of it like on a weekly basis.
That'd be great. Obviously, that would be a real good way of doing it. All right, well, we've gone through this particular show. Thanks, Rich, for calling in, and I'll talk with you soon.
Hey, take care.
All right, that's Richard Stewart, publisher of EcoGuides.info down in the Florida Keys. He's in Key West today. check it out, in ecoguides.info. We'll be talking with him about Eco Week in the Florida Keys again. This is Ken English for Eco Lounge in Miami, Florida. Have a great week.